Welcome everyone to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper into our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to go on a trip with your favourite group of friends.
Hello and welcome to the Friends That Carry On podcast. Today we are going to be talking about travel photography. And in the friends that are here today is...
Walt.
Brian Romine here.
Eric Fargo.
Tony.
And I'm Jim Scott. Today, before we get started, you can always find us on the web at www.friendsofcarryon.com and on Facebook and Instagram at Friends of Carry On. Well, not .com, but just at Friends of Carry On, right? Anyhow, Eric, you're leading us today. You're our photography expert. You've actually... done photography as a business, so you've got a lot of technical insights, and then hopefully we've got some of our own insights and anecdotes with why we take pictures and post them and so on and so forth. So, Eric, why don't you take the mic?
I hope that you do have some insight, because I can't do it all. Gosh!
Thank goodness.
photography, so why? Okay. Well, I guess I'll just start right off the bat and cover some basics. Really basic things to help the average everyday person out there take a good quality photograph. I'm basically self-taught. I did take a photography class and learned in high school my senior year and learned to actually develop black and white film, so I developed a niche for it and a liking for it early on. My sister did it too, and I helped her develop film when she actually has a degree from Shepherd in photography. My dad built her a room, and she would make her own prints, and I'd help her do it. So I took an interest on it early on in life, really. But when I wanted to do it as a job and try to make money at it, I guess I taught myself to go out and learn the basics. And by that time, you could just, you know, go on the internet, learn the basics. And some of the basics I'd like to share with people are basically one rule that I've always liked to share with people is called rule of thirds. It's a basic rule of thirds, and I'll read you the rule from Wikipedia. So the rule of thirds, Wikipedia says, the rule of thirds is a rule of thumb or guideline which applies the process of composing visual images such as designs, films, paintings, and photographs. Well, what does that mean, right? So if you have a photograph has a subject just like every sentence, right? Every sentence has a subject. A photograph usually has a subject. Somewhere in the photo is a subject. Where do you want to put that photo in the third, either the left third, the center third, the right third, the top third, the center third, and the bottom third? You can break a photograph down.
Isn't that nine?
That's nine.
Right? Oh, sorry. Well...
Jim Scott, our math expert.
Photography and math lesson.
So the rule
Photo
of
math.
So the rule of thirds also works in interior design.
Yes.
My wife is an interior designer, and quite often she will segment a room, and like on a particular wall, there'll be three items of interest on that wall. So it's the same concept.
It's the same basic concept. Excellent.
Interesting. So Eric, when you mentioned the subject, would you be placing the subject within one of those thirds?
Yes. Everyone's different. How everybody's eye is different. You know, art looks different to everyone. Everyone's eye is drawn to something different. So, you know, the subject may look best. When I take photos, and because of today's technology, you can take hundreds and thousands of photos. So you can take a photo and put the subject in the center third, the right third, or the left third, whatever, and use them all at a later time and keep them. Or, you know, just use one of them, whatever looks best to you. Or
with cell phones today,
yeah,
so many people have smartphones with good cameras. As a photographer, do you think that's a good idea, or do you need a camera?
No, you don't need a camera. As a matter of fact, I was going to talk about this a little bit later. Sometimes I don't even take my camera because I'm just so tired of carrying the bulk.
Carrying it around.
Yeah. Right. I really am. And the phones today are spectacular. And you can really go into the deep settings of the phone that a lot of people don't even know exist.
Well, I was going to say, the phone's no different than a regular high-end camera.
Right.
It has a lot of potential that people don't know that it
can
do.
Tap into.
So people will say, oh, my phone doesn't take good pictures. What does? You just don't take good pictures with your phone.
Right. Right.
So
I think you may have said that to me, Tony.
And that's why we're talking about
you're just a bad subject. That's all.
I'm putting myself in the wrong third.
That's why we're talking about it today, right? So help people. So, you know, it's always a good idea to whatever. You know, when you pick up the phone, you have something in mind. You picked it up for a reason to take the photo, and there's either going to be a subject in it. And sometimes putting the subject in the dead center of the photo is boring.
Yeah,
it's just that simple.
Well, the other thing is part of the reason, and this goes really more into at least for travel, right? When you're going someplace, one of the things the reason you're taking a photo is to capture where you are, right? So if you're smack in the middle of the photo, you're really not getting much representation of what is in the background because it's taken very small pieces. Versus if you can be off to the side, right, you can get like the Eiffel Tower off to your right. But if you're in a smack in the middle of it and the Eiffel Tower is just off in the right corner of it, it really doesn't have much appeal.
Right, I agree. Mm-hmm. So it's within the eye of the beholder, just like beauty, you know. Some people can take a good photo and some people can't. And some people I think a lot of people are too quick about it these days. You know, in the old days, photography, when you had to use a camera, it was all about setup. If you set everything up properly, you're going to get a good photo, which means your lighting, which we'll get into here in a second, and your tripod, whether you need it or not, things like that. A lot of those are still necessary today, even with a cell phone. You know, setup is key. And you can buy some of these accessories to help your setup and really take a good photograph, because sometimes these cameras are so sensitive, they'll pick up your pulse, you know. So if you want to get that sharp, you're never going to get that sharp because it's going to pick up the pulse in your hand. They're that sensitive and that good. So
pretty crazy. It's wild. So let me ask you this though. What's important about travel photography?
What's important? Memories for me. I think it's a subject that's probably different for everyone, maybe. Some people, it's work. It's their work. National Geographic type people, it's their work. For me, it's memories. And nowadays, with technology, it's time stamping. Time stamps everything.
That's because you go so many places, you forget where you were.
Is that a bad
thing?
That
was actually one of my notes was the reason for taking photographs is to remember where I've been and when.
That's a good problem.
Absolutely. It helps me if somebody asks and says, well, Brian, when you were in Germany, what did you do? Well, I can go back and it's really just into my phone and I can go back to those dates and I can scroll through the pictures by each day and it helps me remember what I did. So it's to help me remember because I'm a little older now. And
so is that why I see you taking pictures, walking to the office, so you remember where you are?
I remember how to get home.
So that's like dropping breadcrumbs.
It is. It very much like that.
But the other thing I noticed too is, and I'm stealing this totally from Trevor Noah. We went to saw him in concert the other week and he was talking about you were just talking about how easy it is with your phones to take pictures. He's like, if you notice, everybody is taking a picture. Picture, 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 picture. How many people even go back and look at them? Now, if you really are truly into it, most people are snapping pictures because they feel like they needed to take a picture or they want to instantly throw it up onto Snapchat or Instagram or something social media, and then they forget all about it. So I think part of the thing, if depending on what your purpose of the picture is, probably dictates how much time and importance you should take into the setup. If you're just going to throw it up on Snapchat just to brag about where you're at today, you know, is a little different than if you want to put a canvas on a wall.
Well,
right?
I mean, I think that's an interesting question for everybody is, you know, why do you pull your phone out or your camera out to take a picture? What causes you to do that? What's the purpose? What's the reason?
For me, when I travel, it's a view.
Mm-hmm.
My mind's drifting.
A landscape?
Yeah. Okay. My mind's drifting to like Haiti. There's a Baptist missionary mountain that they've developed and cultivated, and it's such a beautiful mountainside. It goes up to like 4,500 feet. It's so beautiful, but when you take the picture, and this is a question for you, sometimes it's so surreal when you're there, it doesn't parlay into that photograph, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sometimes the reality isn't transformed through the photograph.
Well, sometimes the picture can't capture it.
Sometimes it can't.
Yeah.
And sometimes it captures it more than anything. It just depends. Really, it depends on my lighting. That's another basic tip I'd like to give is lighting.
Yeah.
As the sun shines into my face. But that's a good thing. Basic lighting, yeah. The first thing I learned as far as making money with photography, there's only two real good times to take pictures outdoors. and that's sunrise and sunset. Any other time, your picture's going to be hard to deal with. Sun right over 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, you're going to have to deal with all kinds of things. If you're going to take good photographs, do it when the sun's setting or do it when the sun comes up because the light is warmest.
So either get up early or stay up all night.
Yep.
Well.
Yeah.
When the sun is setting, not already set.
Oh, gotcha.
So the sun becomes a part of the third in a photograph.
In a roundabout kind of way, yeah, I guess it could. It's because it doesn't necessarily have to be in the photograph, but it is creating the light of from it is creating the photograph. So never thought of it that way.
That's when it's overhead, it washes everything out, right?
What's that?
When it's overhead. I mean,
it's very bright, and at 12 o'clock in August brightness. But sometimes, you know, when you're working, you've got to work around that because people do things on schedule and, you know,
yeah,
you just have to learn how to use it.
During the day, we have a picture here that I took that's hanging on the wall, and it was in the middle of the day, and you helped me, Eric, in kind of working with that photograph to deal with the midday sun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But some of the photos that I took that same day, if you're in the shade, even if it's the middle of the day, you can get some really cool mm-hmm. shots with the sun coming through the trees if you have a lot of that light blocked out. So I don't know that I'd agree that the only time to do it is sunrise or sunset, but
it's easier.
It's easier. You don't have to think as much, I suppose.
But unfortunately, you can't help when you're at a fantastic place and you want to take a picture, and it is what it is. Now, that you just have to try to position yourself as best as possible.
And my tip for that, again, on lighting is this, you know, the sun. Just you have to, if you're going to put your subject, you're taking picture of people. If you're going to put sun behind the subject, you're going to silhouette them no matter what. Now, these new phones may auto-correct that. I don't know. I've never really seen what's going to auto-correct it that well unless you turn your flash on your phone or what have you. But if the bright sun is behind a person, they're going to be silhouetted. It's just it's physics, I guess, at that point. You know, so you, what you do
like
is,
an eclipse.
What you want to do is you want to put the sun in the people's face, really. Now they may be squinting, but there's
can't
tricks for
that
trade. What's that?
So you can't really correct that either.
I mean, you could correct it post if you really want to get deep into it, but post photograph. But yeah, lighting the sun is, you know, it's going to make or break your photo, really. In the time of the day that it's taken, this is going to make or break your photo also.
Favorite photo of all time.
I was going to say, Brian, you just talking about great places. What's favorites?
Favorite photo.
I've taken so many, man. I mean,
Top five.
Three or five, right?
Well, that
other
one.
Than the one that Walt is in.
Yeah.
I know that's your favorite.
Yeah, the Streets of Fire that I took in Paris, I really like that photograph because we put some work into that photograph.
That was fun.
You know, you couldn't take...
it's on my wall.
You couldn't take a tripod up there. You had to sneak a little one up, and you can't go up there and set up tripods. They don't really like that. They frown upon that.
Yeah, that's
right?
On the top of the Arc de Triomphe.
I'm sorry. Yeah, on the top of the Arc de Triomphe. I forgot to tell you that's where we were.
Yeah.
And it was dark. So you have to keep the camera still when it's dark, or it's going to get the movement of the earth. It's going to get everything, and the lights are going to blur. And I wanted a still photo. So I had to lean over the edge and kind of set this little half tripod like we're talking on today on these microphones, a little mini tripod, and put my camera on it. And it worked, and I was able to snap a long exposure photograph. And when I took it to post photograph and worked on it, I exposed it the maximum amount I could. I'm like, that's really cool. I like that. And I left it that way. So it's just an overexposed photograph of the Champs-Élysées and
it's all the streets that go
it's all,
into
yeah,
the
it's
circle
everything.
There.
It turned out really well, and
yeah,
I really
cool.
That's probably my favorite that I've taken. Man, I've been so many cool places. You know, I tell you, that photograph up on top of Maryland Heights we've been a lot of beautiful places in this world, but up on top of Maryland Heights overlooking Harper's Ferry where the two rivers come together, it's one of the most beautiful photographic scenes I've seen and all over the world, really. And, you know, so we live in a really special place to have that right here.
Yeah. I was going to mention that last week when we were talking. Jefferson Rock, which is on the West Virginia side of Maryland Heights, and it looks down. So if you're on Jefferson Rock on the West Virginia side and you're looking down the river, you're looking down the Shenandoah, and the Potomac comes off the left. And at certain times of the year, the Shenandoah can be flooding, so it's running brown or muddy, and the Potomac is running green. And when they converge at Harpers Ferry, at the point of Harpers Ferry, you have a green and brown waterway spilling into the Potomac at that point. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is a special place. I recommend anybody come check it out and make that hike up to Maryland Heights. It's worth it. It is a hike. It's, you know, it's not easy, but it is, the view is worth it 1,000 times Absolutely. Over, if you ask me. Now, what's interesting about that particular spot is I can remember never seeing, you know, before digital photography came along, you didn't see very many winter photographs from up there. There's a reason for that. That's a heck of a hike. And to get up there with snow, you know, looking at Harpers Ferry snow cover. Well, I don't even remember. I have the photo. I have to time and date stamp it, but I have it. It'll tell you when I did it. I hiked up there, and it was snow. It had snowed, but we had ice the following day or so. So we had an inch of ice that when you walked, you had to kind of stomp your feet to get through that inch. I hiked up there to get a photograph of snow-covered Harpers Ferry. Why did I do that, right? I believe me, when I was doing it, I'm like, why am I doing this?
I understand.
I really wanted that photograph. You don't see that very
well. It was a good picture. I remember buying that. Mm-hmm. You stretched it out over both rivers and sort of a panoramic view, and mm-hmm. it was a great picture, and I bought that and gave as a gift to somebody that Christmas.
Thank you. I appreciate that. There's a good dealing with the elements. So you're given whatever God gives you. You know, there's clouds up there. How do you make that look good? And then I got up there, and I'm thinking, the heck with making it look good. The view makes it look good in and of itself. So I'll just let the clouds do their own thing and work it at post photography and kind of make it cool and pop out and make the, you know. So it turned out to be a really good photograph. Awesome. That's one of my favorite ones.
Brian, what about you? What's one of your favorite?
Yeah, it was interesting that Eric brought up Maryland Heights and Walt brought up Jefferson Rock. You know, a few of my favorites are, of course, from travels and, you know, the Eiffel Tower and pictures from the top of Arc de Triomphe at nighttime, which the photograph that we have in our office that you took, Eric, of what you called the streets of on fire, mm-hmm. That inspired me to take those pictures up there.
Oh, cool. Great.
And it was, you know, it was a really cool picture. But, you know, my favorites kind of go hand in hand with, you know, what causes me to, or the reasons why I take photographs when I'm traveling. And it's mostly related to family, you know, so I want to send pictures back to my parents. They love to get pictures of the kids, of us out doing things. So that's one of the reasons. And so some of my favorites are, and Eric, when you mentioned Maryland Heights, my son and I, we ran the JFK 50 miler back in November. And one of our runs was up or from Shepherdstown to Harpers Ferry up Maryland Heights.
Oh my!
And we took a selfie up there, and it was the middle of the day. But it just turned out to be a great photo. And that's certainly one of my favorites. And of course, when we finished the race and we've got a photo together, that's great. Anything with me and the boys, and then one with me and my wife at Jefferson Rock, as you were mentioning, we had hiked up to the top of Jefferson Rock and we were inside of the old church up there and had a picture taken of us through one of the windows of the church as the sun was setting. And you got the rivers in the background and the ruins of the church all in one photo, and that was one of my favorites.
What about you, Walt?
One of my favorite photos is with Jim Scott, Yank, and Terry Hall. My wife took a picture of us under the Eiffel Tower my very first time, and it's in our bedroom. And it's one of those memories that you enjoy. And another favorite is sitting at Sakakura with Yank and Terry, just having a bottle of wine and some baguettes and just watching the street performers. Mm-hmm. Just those are, like you said, those personal photographs with like Sakakura in the background. Those are, I think, really valuable.
It's awesome.
Yeah. The, you know, the pictures of the scenery and the locals when you're traveling are wonderful. the ones that bring back those personal memories always turn out to be my favorites. When I look at those and I remember the experience that went along with the photograph, you know, I can take 1,000 pictures in Paris or in Germany or in Italy, but the ones where you look at them and you remember a moment, those are always my favorites.
What about you, Jim?
I'm going to answer this in two parts. First, Brian had asked earlier why we take pictures or like to take pictures and so forth. And I used to hate to take pictures. Couldn't stand it. I didn't want to be bothered with carrying around a camera. And then if I'm looking at something awesome, I don't want to be digging in to find a camera, or especially when we first started traveling. I mean, you're truly carrying a full camera and that type of stuff. So I never had the patience to learn, you know, a normal camera and then carry it around and then have the patience in the moment of whatever that scene was to take the picture. So I hated it. But then obviously after we started traveling and this became a thing, I realized I couldn't just rely on everybody else's pictures, whether it was uploading to social media or whatever, and that I needed to get a little discipline in my life and add taking pictures. So I still wasn't going to carry a big camera around. I wouldn't go out there and shop all the Canons and Nikons and all that type of stuff. But I knew if I got a good cell phone, which I had had smartphones and all, but I'm just like the people Tony talked about, that you have all these things within your camera that's good, but I have no idea how to use them, and I didn't want to learn. So about, I guess now a little over a year ago, when I really had made the commitment to myself, one of those New Year's goals or whatever, that, hey, I'm going to take better pictures, or I'm going to take pictures, and I want them to be decent. So at that time, the Google Pixel phone had just come out, and at the time, it was the best cell phone camera. So I decided to invest in that, figuring it would help correct a lot of my imperfections.
So, well, at least in your one. Photos, you mean?
In my yes, in my photos.
Good.
So anyhow, so I got that. I learned a little bit, obviously, to do better. Start listening to little tips Eric said about the thirds and lighting and that type of stuff, and tried to incorporate it. But even then, I'm not real patient in the moment. I want to enjoy the moment and that type of stuff. So I find myself clicking a bunch of shots, trying to get it lined up and set up, hoping one or two of them are good, but of the same thing. So I'm a little different in my philosophy, but there's probably a lot of people like me out there that aren't necessary camera enthusiasts. But having said that, so that's why I had to say all that, because like the picture Walt talked about, the Eiffel Tower, that's one of my favorites. I mean, I got some of my best friends. First time I'd also been to Paris and under the Eiffel Tower, and to have a beer there and they capture it. And just before that, I had been interviewed by a Chinese documentary.
What?
And spousing on, yeah, they asked me something, and I don't remember what the question was now, but it had something to do with politics and all. And I just gave them some long, drawn-out BS answer. But they're sitting there with a big camera. So I was on some Chinese documentary just before that picture. So it brings back a couple memories.
Jim is really smart, you guys.
Hardly. They picked the wrong person, though, because I didn't shut up.
Now I had a few beers, right? Documentary.
Definitely a couple. So, and I don't even know if they serve beer at the Eiffel Tower anymore. At least I don't remember.
You can't take that picture that you guys took.
No.
You can't do that now.
Yeah.
And who took that picture?
The Chinese people.
Oh, no. It's a really good photograph because, again, what draws your eye? Why do you take the photograph? Why do you look at something and say, oh, I'm going to pull my camera out of my pocket? With me, I like depth of field. There's good depth of field because it's from underneath of you all, and the Eiffel Tower is behind you, and of course it gets smaller in the depth of field. So it's a really good photograph. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Tracy did good. Yeah. That's a great picture. And there's a bunch of others have been taken by our friends, and Tony's probably going to mention one, so I'm not going to bring that up now. So they're just fantastic, but I was always borrowing from other people. So when I'm writing a blog or something, I was going back and stealing other people's pictures to put in the blog. Even though I'm in the picture, I was on the trip, I experienced it, it still wasn't my picture. So that's why it was important to me to be able to at least have some authentic pictures of my own. So starting here in the last year and a half, so it's a very short period of time for our travels, started taking those. And I guess one of the nice features on the Pixel is at night, it's not a flash, it has night photos. Mm-hmm. the two that I've, and I've got a travel room at the house that I've put a lot of our pictures up, some small, some bigger, whatever. There are two really good pictures that just happened to turn out. I had no idea whether they would or not. And one is when we were in Athens at Seal Rooftop Bar of the Parthenon, and it lit up and it turned out beautiful and just an iconic moment and one of those hair-raising moments when you were there. So it captured the memories, probably more important than anything. Mm-hmm. And then I was in London about this time last year, and we had been at London Tower of London, and then stopped at the little bar Hung, Drawn, and Quarter at the top of the hill. And we were coming down, and one of the couples that were with us, Kurt and Robin Bridges, wanted to get some pictures of Tower Bridge. So we took a bunch with people in it, but I got one that didn't have anybody in it, and the bridge was lit up, and it has sort of a blue tint to it with the river shining off, and it just turned out beautiful. So that's another one that I've blown up. So I've got a couple iconic spots that just turned out to be good night pictures for whatever reason. So,
and they were yours too.
And they were mine. So that, yeah, that helped also. So, and a bunch of others, but just off the top of my head, and to answer your question, those would be the ones I think of right now.
Another thing comes to mind is timing. I mean, sometimes timing is the only thing. It's the only certain time you can get a picture. Sometimes timing is key. So,
also if
tides, things like that.
Or just the crowd, you know, the moment, yeah, catching the right, like, person at the right time.
You're talking about time of the day. Like, if you're going to snap a picture of Running of the Bulls and San Fermin Festival, you can't do that at sunset.
Nope.
Between 8 and 8:02.
Right. And there's only so many spots, believe me. There's only a few
pictures,
spots.
You can take pictures at 6:30 and watch some of the people from the night before walk in.
That you can do.
With some really... Yeah. Sad eyes.
Yeah. Or happy eyes.
Happy eyes. Yeah. It's all about happy eyes.
The other thing I'd like to mention, anybody have anything else before I get onto that?
Well, yeah.
Well, I was going to mention that. I think we still have Mr. Price there.
That's his favorite picture.
And see, this is what's funny. So when you talk about moments, that's really, for me, like 95% of my pictures. I'll occasionally find a view that's, you know, awe-inspiring. But even when I take it, it's about remembering that moment because it was so cool, you know. So when I asked you that question, I was sitting there thinking I could probably rattle off 20. That's and every one of them has a memory specifically attached to it. But the two that I'll do three. I was cheap. So one is it was an evening and it was on our first trip to Europe and first time up to Montmartre and those steps. And this is what's funny. So my wife, Shelley, as a little girl, had a picture of Sakakur, the steps, on her wall and never knew that's what it was. And she didn't even know what it was until we walked there. And when she saw those, she was like, oh, my God, right? So Terry Hall took a picture. And again, I wouldn't say it's the best. You're not going to blow this up on a canvas because, you know, it's pixelated. It's night. But he captured a few pictures of her and I sitting, just kind of relaxing and chilling on the steps at night. So that's like a huge, huge memory for me. I think the picture, Jim, you were mentioning was on our big trip in 2013 on the steps of Cordonneau. We had that whole group that was in there after we did that whole wine tour or the champagne or cava, technically, tour. We're sitting on the steps and our tour guide, I think, is the one who ended up taking that picture. But that, again, what a spectacular trip. And that's one of the few pictures where the whole group, for the most part, was, you know, captured. So
in one place.
Yeah.
When I think of Friends That Carry On, I think of that photograph. And I wasn't in it, but I look at you guys and that's truly who we are and what we are.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'll say
it's a good representation.
And another one, which is similar to that, and it's more recent. It was actually your first trip to Pamplona. And it was on Guinness Mondays, right? So
Guinness Mondays, cool.
Yeah. So we roll up there, and we just happen to get a picture with all of us wearing, you know, similar T-shirts, and, you know, and it was just it's a great group picture. So when you look at that picture, and that's one of the pictures that's on our website, by the way, Friends
and an example of taking photos in order to remember things that you may not remember otherwise.
Absolutely. And then on a selfish note, again, talking about a moment, was... That same year, Yeah, I think that my last run is like one of my favorite pictures, right, with the bull that I got to run with for a significant period of time and got bruises from him and all kinds of wonderful stuff. But one of the professional photographers there captured that moment. So it wasn't my picture, but it was one of those few moments where you're lucky to capture that picture if you run 50 times. So, you know, so every one of mine is all about memories. Yeah.
Now, talking about Shelley, I would say that's destiny.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's one of those things that I always look back on. That was just a really, really cool moment. Yeah,
she's mentioned that story to me, and I think it's just a remarkable story. Yeah. A little girl growing up in West Virginia with a picture of the stairs leading up to Montmartre in Sacré-Cœur, and you end up being there one day. That's pretty special.
A couple little other tips I'd like to give. Well, before I get there, I've been up in two hot air balloons and photographed. Not many people have really done that. I don't even know of anyone else except, you know, some pictures you may see in a magazine or something. I don't know anybody personally that's done that. And that was a really cool experience. And I got to go above the Shenandoah Valley from the Virginia Balloon and Wine Festival years ago.
Yeah.
I just got an inkling to, they were having the contact of pilot. I contacted several. One got back to me, and he traded my photographs that I took. It was $200 to go up in one of these balloons, but he agreed to trade a photograph that I took for that, so I didn't have to put out any cash for it. And I went up in a balloon. It was a really interesting experience. I have wonderful photographs from that because I rose up above the Shenandoah Valley, and the clouds are still stick to the river, and it snakes through the valley. It's just spectacular. I'm like, oh my God, these are the greatest photos ever. And they turned out very well.
So did you have the wine after the balloon ride, or did you have wine on the balloon? How does the balloon and wine festival work?
Can you drink and fly?
Right.
Actually, the pilot does not, but we became very good friends. I took two flights with him. He was a French guy. I'm sorry, I forgot it. I forget his name because it's been many years ago. And he celebrates every landing with a champagne toast.
Thankfully, get his feet back on the ground.
Yes, he is. No kidding. No, I'm not kidding. So I flew with him twice, and I actually did a 9/11 a memorial balloon flight they do every year. They release in Pennsylvania at what's the academy there? No, not in Pennsylvania. It's in Virginia. I can't remember.
BMI?
No. It's a prep school. I forget. Randolph-Macon Academy.
Randolph-Macon.
Is that right? Is that in Virginia, correct?
I believe it is.
Yeah, that's where it was. And they commemorate the pilot and one of the planes went to Randolph-Macon Academy. So they release balloons from there every to commemorate 9/11. I don't know if they still do it, but this was several years ago.
I find it funny that he feels a need to actually celebrate every landing, like, thank God we made it again.
I'm not sure that's confidence.
He was a good pilot, man, because that second flight we did from Randolph-Macon, it was low cloud cover and overcast, so we couldn't go very high. So we flew along treetop level. This was wild because you're flying at 50, 60, maybe 80 feet along the ground and controlling so you don't run it. We could actually touch some of the oak trees. So this was a pretty wild experience. I like that kind of thing. I like adventure like that. That excites me, and I really enjoyed it. Now, the pictures weren't that great because the colors weren't great and the sun wasn't out, but the experience was awesome, and photography took me there. So
I hear touching oak trees is code for I almost crashed.
give me air.
Tony would want the champagne before landing.
Well, I'm going to do the bourbon before we go up, and I'll celebrate when we land.
Is it weird when you were talking about that I had college flashbacks?
Eric, before you go on, you mentioned the skies. It reminded me of a tip I'm pretty sure I got from you when we were in Greece, but didn't really apply it till we were in Southeast Asia. When we were in Cambodia and at all the temples, and a lot of them, of course, the temples go fairly high, were kind of shooting up, so you had the sky as a natural background, and it was making sure that you got the skies were really blue these days. I mean, there wasn't hardly a cloud in the sky, but getting that blue background at the top or wherever. So it was coming in. I don't know if it's a focal point or the best way to articulate this, but getting in there so that it silhouetted or whatever what I was shooting, which were the temples, but having that blue in there so it made a starking background to it. But anyhow,
the contrast,
right? So,
hey, Jim, don't look now, but you're thinking deeply about it.
Well, it was quick. It was up, and I knew
it was a fleeting moment
to raise the camera a little bit higher just to get that blue background in there. So, but since then, I've gotten a few of them put on canvas and in my room, they look great. So.
Nice. So if they're wall worthy, you should be proud of it.
Yeah,
you really absolutely should.
Now, I think that's something worth mentioning is the high quality, wonderful photos that you can have put on canvas that you take right from your phone and you can send off to have put on a nice canvas and put on the wall. We have several here in the office and I didn't realize that until a couple of years ago. I think Eric, you were the one that suggested that. Mm-hmm. And boy, what great artwork you can do for a reasonable price, and it's your own photographs that, you know, that stir up those memories and it's
just
a wonderful
from a tip
thing.
Though, real quick. So, which I think we should throw in just tips, right? For not the professional photographer. When it comes to that, a lot of people are snapping pictures right for social media and they think, well, I put that up on Facebook, so I don't really need it anymore. I can always get it. Just remember, they're going to compress it to death. So the photo that you took on your camera that you threw up to Facebook is not the photo you're going to get back. So don't think you can pull it from Facebook and then turn it around and put it on a 18x24 canvas. That ain't going to fly. So just keep that in mind as far as when you're taking pictures, before you delete them, make sure you're not going to use them for another need that you would need that high resolution. So
yeah, no, that
other quick little tips, look down, look up. Look left, look right. Look, a lot of people don't look down, look macro. You know, macro is really cool. I like to get perspectives from, like, the locks, for instance.
A lock bridge?
On the bridges, you know, the close up or the macro of the locks with water in the background. You know, Rome's spectacular. I really like taking photographs of Rome. The water's really clear and I took a lot of good photos in Rome, all of Italy, really, because the lighting was good.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I got one that I think you're talking about. It was on a trip across the Atlas Mountains. And we stopped at that little cafe on a mountain cliff, right, that overlooked this huge valley. And it had that azure blue everywhere on their gates and the chairs and everything. And it's such a stark contrast to the red, yellow desert that was behind us. And I took a couple of different photos, like focusing on the far away desert with that blue kind of blurred out of focus in the foreground, and then just the opposite. And those two photos side by side are really kind of wild looking. You know, kind of that whole depth and.
Yeah, different perspectives. I mean, a lot of people like to take photos of pets and dogs and cats. Well, get down to their level and see what it looks like from there and take a photograph from there.
Hey, put a GoPro on a collar of a dog. Yeah. That's the best pictures ever.
I know, right? you know, an ant's view, the view of an insect. I mean, if you got a
good... You're talking about your own dog, Tony, or just anybody's?
I'm
going to
put a GoPro on one evening when we just are letting loose and just see what happens. That could be funny.
Yeah, so, you know, look for different perspectives from different perspectives, you know, heights, lows, you know, out in the middle of a railroad, maybe something like, but don't get yourself hit. Sorry.
Don't tell people to go to railroads.
Yeah, don't do what we do, folks. Don't do this at home, right?
Another good tip, when you were talking about thirds, and the glorious thing about having a camera now, whether it's your phone or just a regular camera, is the fact you don't have a film limitation. I mean, barring you just being at the end of your memory card, right? You can take 25 photos in 10 seconds, you know? So when you were saying you should capture, when you're taking a picture, go ahead and take four or five of them, because you never know when you're, especially if it's a person, whether somebody's looking away, somebody's, you don't have to tell them to go back, just snap a bunch of them and then move the target around in the focus in your camera and have those different backgrounds. And you look at them later and delete the five that suck, and then you may end up with, you know, one or two that are great. But
yeah,
why not take a bunch of them? It doesn't
take
that
much
time.
Really good advice.
And you also never know who accidentally photobombed you or just stepped in or just stepped out and you thought they were out of the
right
frame, and then you see their ass or their hand or something like that in there.
One of my favorite photos is a photobomb. It's of me and Lee Lucas at Running of the Bulls, and we're at the opening ceremony, and this Asian couple, I go to take this picture, and this Asian couple clearly behind us just photobombed the crap out of this photo. And I look at it, I'm like, oh man, they just photobombed us. And then I look at the photo, I'm like, oh, it's actually cool. I like that. That's a good rendition of right. what's going on here, because that was craziness, right?
Yeah.
So I love that photograph. I really do. Just because of the photobomb, really. Not because of Lee.
Never about Lee.
And I got another quick tip, too, that, you know, it's one of those things I would say is it's very relevant today's world. Everybody's snapping pictures of everything we were talking about. And I think you should, because you want to capture the moment. But also don't lose sight of the fact that you're in the moment. And make sure you capture it yourself before you take the photo. Or if you take the photo, make sure you allow your time to enjoy actually being there, so that the only thing you're remembering is just the photo, right? Because, I mean, we go to so many places, but they're spectacular. So absorb it, take it in, and enjoy
Stay
it.
Stay in the moment.
Yeah.
Stay in the moment.
Yeah.
Right. One of the things that I've found that helped me, because I can be one of those people that gets carried away with taking too many photos, and I'll catch myself most of the time. And so what I'll try to do when I see something that I'd like to get a picture of, I'll take four or five, as Tony suggested, and then I'll turn the phone off and put it in my pocket. And, you know, almost kind of force myself to say, okay, you know, unless something else comes up that's really, really cool, you know, put the phone away for a while, or the camera away.
Yeah.
And take in the moment. So you actually remember it and enjoy it, and you don't have a phone out in front of your face the entire time.
Because I will say this, I mean, there's several philosophies to it. I mean, Terry always says, hey, I know I'm going to go back, so I don't try to see and do everything the first time. I mean, the same can be said when you're taking a photo, right? Plan on coming back, you can capture it again if you didn't get it this time. But there's also something else. You're not going to be back to a place for a first time ever again. So that's what I'm saying. When you go, make sure you're enjoying why the hell did you go there in the first place.
I have a good point.
Ooh.
I have a question for you more well-traveled individuals here. When you're diving a little bit more into the local culture, your thoughts on, you know, in different places, they might have different attitudes towards their them maybe being part of the picture, being cognizant of who is taking a picture or asking permission to you guys. Do you scout that out ahead of time? You get a sense of, okay, I'm in a place where I will be a little more cognizant before pulling the phone out and taking a bunch of photos.
I can share a story.
I thought somebody might have one.
So, you know, I go to Haiti every 2 years on a missions trip, and the Haitians, most of their culture practice voodoo. So if you take a picture of a Haitian, in essence, you're capturing their soul.
Mm.
So you've got to be very careful in a culture like that.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, that's a little extreme, but still.
But I would say it's good practice to try when you travel. I don't necessarily look into all the specifics of it, but I look to see what the general culture is. Because you could get into a couple of things where, just like that with Haiti, there's other locations where people are just very, I guess, quiet or reserved, and they don't want to be in photos. That's just the general culture. Or you could get in a situation where you're in China. You don't want to be caught taking pictures of government installations and get your ass arrested. So I think you should always, if you're going someplace, just kind of do a general research of anything. Behaviors, just like what we were talking about in Thailand or Cambodia about the feet, you know, as right. far as...
It was.
Yeah, so you just... Knowing the culture is, you know, I think is very prepared for anything, including
and
pictures.
Where you're at. Some cathedrals, so forth, allow it. Some do not. Tony's just referencing Southeast Asia, and in the temples, you did not, you know, take pictures. Depending on where it's at, the one exception was the reclining Buddha, where it's more of a
Everybody could take
a picture there, which I did get a great picture that I got on canvas, by the way.
Oh cool. Awesome. I have to check it out. I got some good photos, but I don't know if they were canvas.
Talk about depth of field, right?
It just did a little one. It wasn't like a big one. It surprised me. It turned
from
out
the
good.
Head or from the feet?
The head.
Yeah, so depth of field.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So know your actual spot, because it might be the temple or whatever, the location, but then the people also.
That question takes me to Vietnam because in the picture I took of the, so we're sitting there on Beer Corner in the little chairs and there's a mom and some kids and the little boy and the little boy picks up the beer mug and I think, oh, that's cute. I want to, you know, look around suspiciously and you grab your camera. I'm like, I wonder if it's okay. I held my camera up. Well, once they saw me, he cheered me and his mom told him to take a drink.
It's a drinking game, Mom.
Right. And this, I'm telling you, this kid was a little bit shorter than me. He was about 4 years old.
So you didn't verbally ask permission, but you did it kind of almost through eye contact.
Yeah, exactly. They were okay. You could tell they were okay with it. They were encouraging me to take photos and making the photo fun, and it didn't make it fun. It made that memory.
In a way, that reminds me. I've seen some memes lately of Generation X, which I'm a part of, at 65 to 79, 80. Mm-hmm. Where as a kid, you know, your dad gave us a beer, gives you a beer to drink it when you're a kid. Well, that's the same thing there. So maybe Vietnam is just a few generations behind where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's like they're growing up, right?
Well, I mean, we've become kind of, what have we become now?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows what we are,
snowflakes.
Right? Yeah.
So back then it was okay to not wear seatbelts and have a beer when you're seven and that type of stuff. So,
hey, we all turned out just fine.
That is very debatable.
that is very debatable. We'll debate that we are fine.
There you go. Good point.
That makes me smile.
Yeah. We didn't actually hit our little foodie break, though.
Oh, right. Well, we could hit that right now. I don't
it's
know.
Too
where
late.
Are we? It's
too
no, late.
No, no. Hey, you missed your dining experience.
Oh,
no,
well,
I'm kidding.
I mean, we could always go back. We get carried away in these. It's such a good photography. Such a good subject for me.
Well, I want to hear it. Can we get Tony in here for that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. I mean, I was actually, thinking about our topic, which is just photography, and again, which to me capture moments, and it's probably because it's recent too, but it was our trip to Greece, and just the dining experience, and that was in Santorini, you know, on the cliffs. And you could find any number of restaurants with spectacular views. I mean, you have to be a idiot not to find a good view. I mean, you really do. I mean, it's just a matter of timing and finding the right spot. But
so we could all find one of those then.
Yes, you could.
Walt might struggle, but
I eventually would find it because they would leave me there.
But it was one of those experiences where we sat down, you know, towards sunset, you know, and those views, the waters, and that's one of those things. I don't care how many photos you take, and there's some spectacular photos out there of Santorini. I haven't seen one photo that is as good as the real thing. And that's, I mean, it's just spectacular. It's just one of those views. And so to me, that meal sitting there, we had a variety of things. You had a seafood salad, which to me, it was crazy. When you think incredible. Salad, right? There's no lettuce.
There was no lettuce there.
It was just a seafood buffet on a plate. So I don't think what either of us was thinking. I was like, if I knew that was the seafood salad, I may have gotten the salad. But
that's the one where I videoed him filleting
my
fish. So to get away a little bit away from photography and into, sorry.
We said fillet fish.
Oh, I was hoping that wasn't a euphemism.
Filet fish? You think it was McDonald's? Is that what you thought?
Eric got so excited he jumped over the table.
Yeah. Well, good thing this is captured on video so you can see his reaction. But
I'm getting a cramp.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We didn't have video ready for this one.
But yeah, the
comedy hour here.
We had the fresh fish catch of the day, and they come out, and the service, the presentation, you know, is spectacular. They fillet it, debone it right in front of you, and plate it, and you know, it was just awesome. And
did you mention the name of the restaurant, or did you remember?
I didn't, just because, honestly, I didn't have a chance to look it up before we came, and I can't remember the name of it. It's going to be in the blog write-up. I'll make sure to put that link in there.
Okay.
Because we did reserve that. You know, we didn't reserve too many meals, but it's those special things. When you try to get dinner at sunset, you better book, right? Yeah. I mean, you can get plenty of places before or after, but if you want to sit there at sunset, you need a reservation. But again, the food was great. I mean, it was great. And it's one of those moments in time that you just go, yeah, I've eaten there on the cliffs of, you know, Santorini at sunset.
It was special. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, that makes me think of some comments that I heard, I don't know if it was you, Tony, or Jim, or Eric, about taking photos of food. And I know that we've talked about that before. So photographs of your dishes, and people post them. You see it all the time now on social media. And I wondered if you guys might have some tips for just taking better photographs of your dishes in restaurants.
My first tip is macro. Macro is close up. Food, if it's good enough to eat, it's good enough to take a photograph of, really. And especially if you're getting in a restaurant, they usually make a nice presentation. Get close to it. Don't get far away from it. You can't see it. People want to blow it up and they want to see food. But I'm bummed, right? So that's my particular preference. I like to get macro shots of food and get close up on it. I think it looks better.
But colors. I've seen some of your photos though where you do just that, but you also incorporate something in the background as well that gives it more variety, more depth, and some things are blurred, which kind of gives it a little bit more character. And I don't know.
That's aperture.
The aperture.
Aperture. Yeah. Where you focus something on a point behind the subject or vice versa.
Is that a setting within?
Yes, it's an aperture setting within the camera.
And there's several phones, like, and I don't know if the newer Samsungs do this, but a lot of them vary by their pictures, or I mean the photo app you're using. But this one has a food setting, and it's specifically aperture. So it has a narrowed focus on it. So with the whole design, that you're blurring out anything that's not in that third of the picture.
But you're using thirds. That was my question. Are you using thirds?
You're always using thirds, really. I mean, thirds are always used. It's just how you use them, I guess, is the best way to put it.
The problem I have is I eat my food before I take
it. You get excited. Well, that's okay. Take a picture of it eating. That's even better. That means it's good.
That's a problem I have quite often.
I can't tell how many pictures of the food that I have taken. And I don't take it all the time. But if it's a special moment or for something cool, I try to sneak a picture of it. You know, also I want to enjoy my food. But I've had to recreate something. I'm like, I had to move something around. I'm like, oh, shit, I just ate half of that. Better,
I'm so
like,
guilty.
Hold on. Here, let me move it over here. I can get this part of it.
I've done that before.
So, I grew up in that 70s family, man. If you were the last one to the table, you didn't eat. So,
I just recently took
teenage boys. I'm still there.
I just recently took a cool photograph when I was in Bologna of Prosecco. I thought it was cool because I'm like, oh my gosh, how many ways can you shoot this glass of Prosecco? I'm always trying to think of different ways to shoot it to make it look different than the last one or 100 of others that I've done. So I actually put the camera lens right up to the glass and took the photo through the liquid.
And I saw that.
It turned out really cool.
One of my favorite pictures, too, as you mentioned that, was at Grape Harvest Festival at Montmartre, standing on the steps there. And, you know, during the festival, they have all the booths, and it was one of the champagne and booth, and they gave me this glass. So I took a picture of it. It was, again, one of those beautiful blue mornings. It's like probably 10:30, 11 o'clock, and don't judge for me drinking champagne at 10:30. It's
not
a Harvest Festival.
No judging here.
Judging.
But it's this picture, and you get the Sakakura in the background through the champagne glass in the blue sky. It is one of those pictures. It looks like an ad picture for them. I probably could turn around and sell it to them, honestly. It's that kind of crazy just thought idea that makes some of the great pictures.
You have to think outside the box a little bit.
So, outside the lens.
So pictures, pictures are moments in time.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Deep.
Just think of that.
Moments in time.
No.
With Walter Palmer.
Deep thoughts by Walter.
Maybe you can write that on the bottom of one of your pictures.
I've already have. It's good. It's right there.
I have to remember my photo saying that I coined years ago, but I can't believe I didn't write this down. I'll have to look it up.
I do remember that.
I know.
I think
I committed it to memory a while back. I'm sorry?
Behind every moment. Commercial now. He had it. It was.
It's in here somewhere.
You just haven't had enough wine.
Yeah, you're right. I haven't.
Well, while he's looking that up, I know we're getting close to the end, but Tony briefly mentioned earlier, but another way of photographing is GoPros, and Tony has been experimenting with that here in the last couple trips. Do you got any thoughts or insights on that?
Yeah, so to me, it's one of those things that it will capture a lot of great things, but it's usually from a specific angle. I mean, GoPros are great for what they are designed to do, which is, you know, that kind of in-person experience. So you're riding the bike, jumping off the, still pretty cool, jumping off the catamaran in Greece, you know, into the water and swimming with the, you know, the fishes, literally, not in the bad way, but, you know, but, and it does capture great video. You can adjust it, and it does have like that fisheye zoom kind of look to it, and it has, you know, perfect things, but it still doesn't, to me, I think without modifying the settings for just that purpose, capture like those still photos that you would really want to do. But as far as some of the cool selfie type of things, it's hard to beat it. It really is. And the fact that it's the side of a much bigger than two postage stamps. I mean, it's just, once you put the cases on it, it's a little bigger, but you can do so much with it. I mean, I've got some great stuff that from that trip. And I will also, one of the things we were talking about too before, I think in a previous episode, was, you know, using, what do they call them? Not the dongle, but that levels out your photos, but you have to use a lot of cameras. I forget the name of it. Isn't it terrible? But once you get to the Hero 7 or Hero 8 of GoPro, its bounce control is spectacular, and you don't need that. So you can do a lot of things with it without having to buy a lot of extra equipment to kind of
balance it. You don't get
out
the movement in the photo.
Yeah, it balances it out, smooths it out a lot more.
Like a gyro.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, and that's terrible because I didn't have to buy one. But if you have an older phone or, you know, some of the older videos, you have to do that to keep that noise down. But they are awesome. I mean, you get some views that you never would have gotten 15 years ago.
I have a question. Do you think we can get some of these photos that we talked about on our website?
Yeah.
Some of our viewers.
I think we should take every one of the photos that we all mentioned, and then we do our blog wrap-up of this podcast episode.
Yeah, it sounds like
we'll throw those together.
Some are there in some of our previously written blogs, but yeah, I agree. We'll post them and put links to them and maybe start some a separate link that has a photo album of favorite pictures.
Yeah, that's a good idea. It's a really good idea.
Well, maybe we'll end it on this. I think I remembered this.
You didn't remember it. You just looked it up.
No, I had to type it out. I didn't. it's instilled in my memory, but I have to type it out to get it proper.
So now nobody can lie about anything. It's captured on
video. Did you say distilled?
Distilled? This still. What? I don't know. What I said. Rewind that back, please. So behind every picture, there's a story. Behind every story, there's a person. Behind every person, there's a purpose. What is your purpose? That used to be. I wrote that years ago when I kind of started photography.
That's not somebody else's? You actually wrote that?
I coined that.
So what's your purpose? Impressed.
I haven't found that out yet. I'm still trying to find that out.
You got a few years left.
Changes every day, right?
It changes every day. What's your purpose?
Well, between 5:30 and 6:30, he's got a purpose.
Yeah, my purpose changes all the time. Does it yours?
Absolutely.
Depending on who I'm with and who I meet.
Man, I feel better.
Brings me to Ralph Waldo Emerson. The fear of doing comes from doing.
You know, nothing brings it full circle like the... How about the old family photo that took me where I'm
right?
You know where I'm going to be in May. You know that photo allowed me to find family. So it's important, folks. Take photos out there. Don't be shy of the good or bad. Take them. You can nowadays you can delete them. So take them.
And let me add to that. I mean, we see that in the Instagram world all these perfect laid out photos that just don't seem real. I mean, or it's a place that me as a nobody will ever get to or see that perfectly laid out place. Whereas I feel like our photos or the photos anybody takes for their memories are genuine. Mm-hmm. They're real. They might be off center. They might not be in the thirds or off center, a little out of focus, but they're real, they're genuine, and it makes that memory that much more special.
Absolutely. I have plenty of pictures that I don't think a photographer would go, damn, that's good, but it's an important picture to me.
Yep.
Well, before we start wrapping up, too, wanted to mention, so we're getting close to St. Patrick's Day, or St. Patty's Day, I should say. And we have a couple of the group going back to Dublin for St. Patty's. So,
how many do we know?
Well, there's two of our crew. We have a few other friends that are also going. But Terry and Jim Reed are both heading that way. So we're going to talk about that next week on next episode. So they're getting ready. They'll be heading out a week or so after that, but we just want to kind of, again, rehash on it. We've talked about it a couple times over various episodes, but seemed very fitting since it's coming up. And then the week after that, assuming everything pans out, we have our good friend John Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway's grandson, will be joining us. He released his book about, 4 months ago, I believe. So we're going to get him on. We met him in our first trip over to San Fermín Festival in Pamplona in 2013. So we thought it'd be cool to catch up with him. So he's going to join us. So that'll be fun. So make sure you stay tuned.
Awesome.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
John Hemingway, ladies and gentlemen. That's pretty cool.
The skill to do comes from doing. That's Emerson.
So. Emerson. Ralph Waldo.
I thought we were quoting Walt Palmer.
No, I had to correct that. Thank you.
Did you have to Google that too?
No.
Google.
We're still not sure if it's right, but you get the gist of it.
We're going to get like 25 comments and be like, dude, he butchered that quote. What the hell?
It's getting closer.
We welcome all feedback and corrections for anything Walt says.
We don't have room for those comments.
Please, no.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of Friends of Carry On. Hopefully you enjoyed today's session on travel photography. And stay tuned to us for next week where we talk about St. Paddy's Day. And if you like, please go to our website, www.friendsofcarryon.com. You'll find lots of good information. If you subscribe, you'll get bonus information, information about our affiliates with discounts and so forth, and links to the places we mentioned throughout a podcast that you can travel to or restaurants you can go to and so forth. So lots of good information there. So join us at friendsofcarryon.com, and we'll see you next time.
I got real quick.
Bye, everybody.
Real quick. For anybody out there who just happens to be either in Vegas or heading to Vegas around April 7th,
April 4th through the 7th, and we're 7th. Speaking on the 5th.
Yeah, so we're going to be hosting a panel on storytelling for the Travel Agents Forum in Vegas. So
exciting.
We'll be there. Yeah, so we'll be doing a panel session, and then we'll also be at the booth later that day and the next day. So if anybody's out that way, make sure they come in and check out and say hi.
At the Paris Hotel Conference Center or whatever.
It'll be awesome.
Is that Paris Hilton?
Her daddy may own it. I'm not sure.
She'll be there, right, Walt?
Right.
Okay.
Peace.
All right, see you guys.
Thank you.
Right. Bye, everybody.
Arrivederci.
Be sure to join the Friends next week for another great discussion. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the Friends and other content at www.friendsatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook by searching Friends at Carry On. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to carry on, friends.